had this air about him, a sense of importance. He really was like a knight, plucked right out of a movie and brought into the modern world. "I have stuff I want to know," Rex said. "First of all, what's really happening to me? I'm getting stronger. I can feel it. And I can heal, like, really quick. I wasn't like that before. How come I am now?" Hillary answered, "If you had grown up here, you would have been strong and fast like the other children. It's because of smells. Down here, smells are everywhere. Up there, no smells, so you were like them. But I knew where you were, my king. I waited until the right age to send Sly up to put smells by your house."
"Smells,"
Rex said, the word drawing forth the wispy memory of a strange scent.
"Wait a minute.
Before I got real sick, I smelled pee around my house. Are you saying I changed because someone peed on my house?" Sly stood and bowed dramatically.
"I had the honor, my king. I'm so proud to know my scent brought you to us."
"But that's gross," Rex said. "Totally gross." Hillary laughed.
"Smells are just another way of talking. Soldiers mark their kills, a way of telling everyone, I am the one that did this."
That made Rex think of Marco peeing on the dead cop. Poor Marco. Firstborn stared at Sly, slowly shook his head.
"I should have known it was you, Sly."
He looked at Hillary.
"You told Sly to do this."
She nodded. Hillary glared at Firstborn with defiance and anger, but also a bit of fear. Firstborn cracked his knuckles. His every motion drew tense looks from Pierre, Servo, and Sly.
"You said he wasn't the first, Hillary,"
Firstborn said.
"Have you really been doing this for 80 years?
Her smile widened.
"You think you know everything, but you know nothing. 11 kings I smuggled out right under your nose. Some I lost track of. Maybe they were taken away by the people who took them in as their own. Some I could not find until it was too late, until they had passed the time that matters for becoming a true king."
Firstborn leaned toward her. Rex heard the shotgun rattle lightly as Pierre adjusted his grip on the weapon.
"But how? How could you get them out? How could I have never learned of this?"
"I have secrets,"
Hillary said.
"Secrets I will keep. We can't have new queens without new kings. The people know this, Firstborn, and they hate you for trying to stop it."
His fist banged against the black table.
"With your own eyes, you saw the death that a king brings. We don't need new queens. We are fine here."
"Fine,"
Hillary scowled. She spread her arms out, the gesture clearly indicating the ship and the caverns beyond.
"There is more to life than this. Even if we get a new queen, she will never change if she can smell mommy's scent. If our kind is to spread, we must send kings and queens to new cities. That is why I took Rex away. That is why I had soldiers watch him grow."
She looked at Rex again. Her warm smile returned.
"If we had waited too long, you would not have the power to call others to you, to bind them to you."
The power to call others. Rex had done that before his fight with Alex Panos.
My dreams.
Were my dreams part of calling to others? Hillary nodded.
"Yes. A king must get the smells while he is young. By 14 or 15 years old, if you have not changed, then the ability to call is gone forever."
14 or 15 was too late. Maybe it had something to do with puberty. Was there science behind it? Or was this some kind of magic? But how does it work?
He said.
What changes me? And how do you know what to do to make someone like me change?
Hillary clasped her hands in front of her.
It happens because it is God's will. It has always been this way. I know how to make someone change because Mommy told me how when I was little. It was before, when her words still made sense.
God did it? Rex had seen many wonderful things, but he wasn't sure if God's will explained all of it. Could it be that his people really didn't know why they were so strong, or how they changed? He would have to worry about that later. What mattered now was finding out if Firstborn could be trusted.
Firstborn, Rex said. What did you mean when you said, the death a king brings?
Sly leaned back and crossed his big arms, as if he'd heard this story so many times it bored him. Hillary grew quiet. Firstborn closed his eyes.
King Jeffrey was born after we arrived in America. San Francisco was much smaller then. It was lawless. Every day ships brought more people. I was young then. I felt Jeffrey's dreams in my sleep, felt his visions when I was awake.
His shoulders slumped. He looked so sad.
What about my dreams? Rex said. Did you get visions from me?
Firstborn shook his head slowly.
I did not. Perhaps I am too old. Perhaps it is because I did not go up to the surface enough. But I know the power of a king's mind touching mine. I felt it from Jeffrey. We would hunt together. I was by his side, always. But death came when Jeffrey grew so proud he abandoned our rules.
Servo scrambled down Fort's chest and jumped onto the table next to Rex.
The rules! The rules make us cowards!
Rex looked from the shriveled man with the big head back to Firstborn.
What are the rules?
Firstborn opened his eyes. He stared at Rex with a pleading expression that said, Listen, and truly understand. He held up one black furred finger.
Never hunt those who will be missed. Take only vagrants, immigrants, people with no home and no one to report them missing.
He held up a second finger.
Never allow a soldier to be seen. Because of cameras and cell phones, this is a far greater challenge now than when I was young.
He held up a third finger.
Finally, never let the humans know we exist. We are stronger and faster. We prey on them. But they are so many. Mommy told us stories from the old country, handed down for generations. Stories of times when the people forgot the rules, and of how the prey would rise up and overwhelm us with numbers. We survive, my king, only because they don't know we exist.
Firstborn looked off to a corner of the room. He stared at a tall candle burning there.
Jeffrey was arrogant. He ignored the rules. He let the people hunt openly. Instead of culling the herd for the weak and the unwanted, we took whoever we liked. Some of us were seen. The police.
He spat the word like it was poison.
They found us. Them and the saviors. They attacked us. Butchered us. They captured Jeffrey and dozens more. Soldiers. Ouvriers. Even our children. I saw them tied to poles, some with ropes, others with shackles and chains. I saw the townsfolk gathering wood, saw them light the flames. Sometimes when I sleep, I still hear the screams of our people, and it makes me want to claw out my own ears.
Rex thought of all the people he'd met down here. He thought of Sly, Pierre and Hillary, the children, the babies, all tied to poles and set on fire. Only animals would do such a thing. That was what humans were. Animals.
Why didn't you do something?
Rex said.
Why didn't you save them?
Firstborn hung his head. Hillary stood. She walked to Firstborn and hugged him. He did not look up.
He saved Mommy,
she said.
And he saved me. I was just a little girl. Firstborn was so brave. He killed so many to get us away. He saved the queens so our kind would live on.
Firstborn nodded. A black furred hand covered his black furred face.
Mommy was smaller then, but it was still difficult, he said. We had to start over.
He looked up. Rex saw the pain in his eyes, the fear that all his work would be for nothing, and the people would die out.
The city was changing,
Firstborn said.
The ships that brought us and thousands of others. They had been buried in landfill as the city expanded the shoreline. I dug down to one of those ships and made a burrow in the captain's cabin. I brought Mommy down there and sealed her in.
Rex leaned back.
Wait a minute. The ship she's in now, that's the same one?
Firstborn nodded.
She hasn't moved from that room in 150 years. I brought her new grooms. She gave birth to Ouviers, to ringers and soldiers. Hillary raised the Ouviers until they were old enough to work, while I taught the soldiers how to hunt, taught the ringers how to be our eyes on the surface. We survived. We rebuilt.
Rex looked at his gray-muzzled warrior with a new respect. Everything in these tunnels, every room, every brick, every person, it was all here because of him. Firstborn had brought the people back from disaster.
The rules keep us safe,
Firstborn said.
Sometimes the prey has money. The ringers use that money to buy what they can. But most of our food comes the way it always has, from hunting.
Hunting. The word sent a shiver through Rex's spine, made his stomach tingle. He remembered the thrill of stalking Alex all the way to April's house. Rex had needed that. The feeling had faded with Alex's death, but the urge was calling once again. Sly had sat silent during the story. Now he leaned forward and rested his elbows on the black table.
Our history is important,
he said to Firstborn.
But it is just that, history. You're forgetting the parts where you ruled like a tyrant, where you didn't just kill babies. You killed people who hunted without your permission.
We must not be discovered,
Firstborn said.
That is what drove every decision I made.
Sly rolled his eyes.
Whatever, old man. You're so brave. Then why do you let Savior slaughter our people?
Sly turned to stare at Rex.
Savior is nothing but a bully, my king. And Firstborn lets Savior live.
Bullies. Rex thought of Alex, Isaac, Jay, and Oscar. He thought of Roberta. Firstborn's eyes narrowed.
You know nothing. My way works. You are too young to understand.
Sly stood and snarled.
We cower! We are murdered, and you do nothing! You forbid us from attacking Savior, from killing the walking nightmare!
Firstborn looked away and waved a hand dismissively.
Everyone knows that Savior kills anyone who tries. To attack him is suicide.
Lies!
Sly pounded a fist against his chest.
If I die trying to kill the killer of my people, that is a life better spent than burrowing in the dirt like a worm.
He turned to face Rex.
Savior is hurt, my king. If we could find the Savior before he heals, we could end the monster's murdering ways forever.
Rex felt Sly's anger, felt it and shared it. Maybe Firstborn didn't know what it was like to be bullied. Firstborn was big and strong. He'd been in charge so long, he couldn't possibly understand what it felt like to live every day in fear.
Savior is devious,
Firstborn said.
He is probably trying to trick us, Sly. Trying to lure us in so he can follow you home and kill Mommy.
Rex looked carefully at Firstborn. The man was lying about something, Rex could tell. What Firstborn said didn't make sense. If they killed Savior, then the people could hunt without fear. Firstborn had secrets. To keep the people safe, he had killed his own kind for over a century. What else had he done? What else had he allowed to happen? Sly's right, Rex said. If you really wanted to protect the people, you would kill Savior.
We have tried, Firstborn said. Savior kills all who go against him.
Sly crossed his arms and shook his head. He was angry, but also excited. He finally had a chance to say what he wanted to say.
That is not so, my king. Some have gone off on their own and never come back. But others have tried, failed, and come back home. When they did, Firstborn killed them to send a warning to everyone else.
Firstborn stared down at the table. Rex didn't have to ask if the accusation was true. It was clear he had done what Sly said. Rex could feel emotions inside of Firstborn. Rage, shame, a horrible burden of responsibility. Loneliness. Rex stood and walked to the other end of the table. Hillary stepped aside. Rex put his hand on Firstborn's muscled, furred forearm and gave a little squeeze.
Tell me why. Tell me the truth.
Firstborn looked up, big green eyes hard at first, then softening. There was desperation in those eyes, even relief. He had been a villain to his own people, and now he finally had a chance to share the reason.
We need Savior. Sometimes the urge to hunt becomes too much for some of us. When it does, soldiers hunt beyond the need for food. They hunt just to kill, over and over again. They draw attention. If the police find these rogue soldiers, these insane soldiers, then the police are that much closer to discovering us again, slaughtering us again. By killing the rogue soldiers, Savior unknowingly keeps our secrets safe.
Rex let go of Firstborn's arm. That was why he let Savior kill? To remove people who disobeyed Firstborn's orders? A true leader, a true king, would let no one hurt his people. He walked back to his seat. Do the police know about Savior?
Of course,
Sly said, disgust thick in his words.
The police help him kill our brothers.
The police and Savior, nothing but bullies who wanted to hurt and kill Rex's people. Sly, how do you know Savior is hurt?
I told Todd to watch his house.
Firstborn stood up.
I gave orders that no one was to go near the monster's house.
Rex pointed at him. Sit down! Your orders don't count anymore unless I say so. Firstborn's lip curled, showing the edge of a tooth, but he sat. Rex let out a slow breath. People shouldn't do stuff to make him mad like that. Do we know where Savior is? Servo skittered to the middle of the table.
The police will know. Todd said cop cars came to his house and followed the ambulance that took him away.
Rex leaned back in his chair. Do all the police know about us?
We think only some,
the little creature said.
If all the police knew, the news people would probably talk about us, but they never do. Fewer people knowing makes it easier to control information.
So then which ones know? Servo shrugged his tiny shoulders, a comical expression considering his much larger head.
We have no way of knowing.
Sure we do,
Sly said. His yellow eyes narrowed in time with his smile.
When you wanted to know the secrets of Marie's children, you asked Firstborn. You asked our leader. We can do the same with the police.
That made sense. If there was some kind of secret among the police, a pact or whatever, then someone high up would probably know about it. Why not start at the top?
I won't let the police bully us, Rex said. We'll get their leader to tell us what she knows. As soon as it's dark, we visit the chief of police.
Hillary stared at Rex like she couldn't believe what she was hearing.
We can't do that. To go after the chief of police, it is madness.
Then Firstborn spoke, softly and slowly.
My king, doing that could expose us to discovery.
They wanted to be safe, to play along with the way things had always been? No. Firstborn and Hillary had grown too old to do what had to be done. Maybe that was what happened after so long without a king. Now that a king was here, the way things had always been done wasn't good enough anymore. That night, things would change. Chapter 23. Aggie's Price. Aggie James was alone in the white dungeon. If he'd been a religious man, he would have prayed, but he knew there was no God. God wouldn't have let his wife and daughter be murdered right in front of him. God wouldn't have allowed these monsters to exist. And if God did exist and allowed these things to happen, Aggie sure as fuck wasn't going to worship him. So while he didn't pray, he most certainly hoped that he could get out of this horrible place. The white jail cell door slowly screeched open. Hillary entered, alone, carrying a heavy knit bag and a familiar-looking, familiar-smelling blanket. But there was a new scent. Faint. Just a tiny sensation in his nose. It smelled beautiful. Hillary walked up to him. She held the bag out by its handles, offering it to him.
Are you ready to help me?
If you let me out of here, hell yes.
Aggie took the knit bag and opened it. Inside, a baby? A sleeping baby boy with deep black skin, far blacker than Aggie's, the skin of a child from Lower Africa. He was swaddled in a blanket marked with crudely drawn symbols. One symbol looked like a triangle with an eye in the middle. Another seemed to be a circle with a jagged lightning bolt through it.
You take this boy,
Hillary said.
I thought the king would make things right, but he is going to do dangerous things. And Firstborn, I think he will try to kill the king. If he succeeds, then he will come for me. I have to act while I still can. Get one more baby out.
She stopped talking. She just stared at the child, as if she forgot that Aggie was even there.
Hillary?
Her eyes snapped up. She blinked, seemed to come back to the moment.
I am going to hide you and the baby somewhere.
Somewhere upon the surface?
No,
she said.
A special hiding place. You will stay there with the boy until I come to take you above.
Aggie nodded violently, even though he didn't really understand.
Yes, I'll do whatever you ask.
She smiled a smile of power.
Of course you will.
She unfolded the smelly blanket and draped it around Aggie.
You wear this and be quiet, just like you did yesterday.
He nodded. He really had no idea if he'd last seen her yesterday, the day before, or just a few hours ago. She finished adjusting the blanket, tugging and twisting in her motherly way.
"Good,"
she said.
"Now hold him close, very close."
Aggie pulled the baby-filled bag to his chest. Whatever this kid was, it was evil. Aggie would play along, say whatever he had to say, do whatever he had to do until he got out of here. Then he could toss the baby into the bay for all he cared about it. He smelled that beautiful smell again. It was the baby. The smell came from the baby.
"Time to leave,"
Hillary said.
"Follow me."
"Where are we going?"
"You know the place,"
she said.
"We are going back to the arena."
Chapter 24 Origin Story. Brian drove Pookie's Buick, following the Jessup's jet-black, highly modified Dodge Magnum station wagon. Passing streetlights cast sliding reflections off the Magnum's polished body. Brian had never really thought a station wagon could be sweet. The customized Magnum, however, would make any gangsta wannabe green with envy. It rode on black chrome rims. Tinted windows hid the inside from view. Pull-out drawers packed the cargo area, hidden from view by the rear hatch. Brian could only imagine what kind of arsenal the grandfather-slash-grandson team had stashed away in the back of that car. Adam, oddly, drove like an old lady, slow, obeying every traffic light and sign, giving people plenty of room to pass him if need be. Brian didn't know much about cars, but even following behind he could hear the Magnum's engine gurgling with unused power. The Magnum turned south on 5-lane Potrero Avenue. 2-story houses and small trees passed by on Brian's right, just a few blocks now. He had time for one quick call. He dialed. She answered immediately.
"Hello?"
How could the sound of her voice make him feel better? "Hey."
"Brian, are you okay?"
"Sure. Didn't you get my note?" She paused.
"I did. Thank you for that. But a nice note and a pot of coffee aren't a replacement for knowing that you're okay."
"I'm okay." He wasn't sure if that was the truth, but it was what she needed to hear. "I just wanted to check in." She didn't say anything. He waited. Up ahead, he saw SFGH coming up on the left. "Robin, I gotta go. Erickson might be in trouble tonight."
"Forget him,"
she said.
"Come get me and we'll just go."
"What are you talking about?"
"All this death,"
she said.
"You and I could just leave, Brian. We get in my car, we pick a direction, and we go. Together."
She was afraid for him. Or maybe she was afraid of what he might do. The sentiment broke his heart, but her solution wasn't an option. "Robin, I can't." She sighed.
"I know. I hope we don't regret it."
Her tone of voice changed again, from melancholy to businesslike.
"Listen, I've been trying to figure out what happened to you. When you were a kid, you had the usual cuts and scrapes, right?"
"Sure," he said.
"And this rapid healing thing, that's new?"
"Yeah. I always seem to heal a little faster than most people, but nothing like it is now."
"It's because your Z chromosome was suppressed,"
she said.
"That means you had all the genetic information, but it was dormant. Your body wasn't doing anything with it. Basically, your Z information was switched off."
That didn't seem possible. How could you have parts of your body that were shut off? Still, he wasn't about to argue with an expert. "So what switched it on?"
"When you came to see me in the morgue, you were sick, right? Really sick, as in body aches, chest pains, all of that?"
How awful he had felt. The fever, the hammering aches, the joint pain. "Yeah, it was bad."
"We need to take x-rays. I bet they'll show the same strange organ we found in Blackbeard. I also bet we find your bones have changed, or at least are starting to change. The sickness was because your body underwent a massive physical transformation. The question is, when did you start to get sick?"
So much had happened in the past few days. It seemed like an eternity since he hadn't been dealing with Erickson, Rex Kapravdichuk, the Boyko kids, Father Paul. That was it. The roof, where he smelled something that made him dizzy. I started getting sick the same day I saw Paul Maloney's body.
Did Maloney's body smell like urine?
He nodded. It did. Urine and something else I couldn't identify. I started feeling crappy soon after that.
Brian, I know what happened to you. Well, the general idea, anyway. We're sure Paul Maloney's death was a symbol killing, like Oscar Woody's. We know Woody's killers had the Z chromosome, so it's logical to assume Maloney's did as well. I'm pretty sure there are hormones in the urine that activated your Z chromosomes, made them start expressing. You had all this dormant code inside you, waiting for a signal. When that signal came, boom, your body was off to the races.
That was one for the comic books. He had super healing, and apparently some level of super strength. And what was his origin story? I sniffed pee. Not exactly as cool as being bitten by a radioactive spider. But why would my Zed be dormant?
I have no idea,
Robin said.
Based on everything else we've seen, it's got to be some kind of species protection strategy. If one of your kind is...
My kind? I'm not one of them.
Scientifically speaking, you are. Don't be a sensitive Sally, anyway. Maybe tens of thousands of years ago. No, hundreds of thousands. But that creates a whole primate family tree issue that...
Robin, I'm almost at the hospital. He saw the SFGH complex coming up on the left. Can you get to the point?
Sorry. My guess is that way back when, if one of your kind was isolated and their genes did express, maybe normal people killed them. So maybe suppressed genes contribute to survival. Maybe the genes evolved to only express if others of your kind are around. A safety in numbers kind of thing. Nature triggers suppressed genes all the time with hormones and other signaling mechanisms. You started out suppressed, normal, until your body detected others like you, then your latent genes activated.
He didn't understand a quarter of what she was saying. Not that any of it mattered right now. I gotta go, he said.
Have you called Pookie?
Shit. He'd forgotten about his partner, and the fact that he'd had Pookie's car for going on 24 hours now. No, I haven't. Can you call him and tell him he can pick up the Buick at the hospital? She paused.
Brian, he was looking for you all day yesterday. He called me this morning. He's pretty pissed you didn't let him know you were alive.
As well he should be. But Brian had too much to deal with at the moment. He really couldn't handle Pookie's disappointment on top of everything else. Look, Robin, just call him for me, okay?
Okay,
she said.
I love you, Brian.
I love you, too. Those words were surprisingly easier to say the second time around. He hung up. San Francisco General Hospital had many buildings, but the northernmost one housed the mental health wing, where Erickson was being kept. A head-high brick wall lined the sidewalk, with a 10-foot-high red fence rising from the top of it. Brian wasn't sure if the fence was to keep people in or out. Adam slowed, then did a fast U-turn to slide into an open parallel parking spot just before 20th. Brian struggled to turn the Buick as sharply and realized that not only was the Buick a crappy car, Adam was a far better driver. Brian parked right behind the Magnum. The Magnum's rear passenger door opened. Alder leaned on his cane as he slowly got out. Brian got out to meet him.
"Wait here, Inspector," Alder said. "I'll find Chief Zhao and straighten this out."
"Are you good friends with her?" Maybe Alder could help patch things up, get Pookie his job back.
"I haven't seen her in 28 years,
Alder said.
"And we're far from friends. Adam, let's go."
Alder's cane clicked against the sidewalk as he and Adam walked toward the opening in the wall that led into the hospital complex. Chapter 25 In the Maze. The electric lights were off. Atop the mast of skulls, a few torches burned, casting out a weak light that failed to penetrate the area's trenches. There was no noise except for the crunch of dirt under their feet and a faint, regular, echoing rumble that came from the shipwreck behind him and to his left. Trench walls rose up on either side. Aggie couldn't see the cavern ceiling high above. It was too dark for that. He kept moving, tried not to think about the fact that he was walking through the maze, the same place the teenage boy had been killed, then butchered for food.
"This way," Hillary said as she turned right.
Aggie followed. That strange, echoing noise picked up in intensity, and Aggie realized what it was. Mommy was snoring. Hillary had led him from the white dungeon, taking a different path than she'd used before. This time, instead of coming out on the ledge, he found himself sliding through a narrow, hidden passage and into the arena maze. Aggie hadn't known what to expect. He certainly hadn't expected the place to be empty, nor would he have dreamed that a place of monsters and death and terror could be even more disturbing when it was empty and mostly dark. A tug on his arm. Hillary gestured all around, showing off like a proud homeowner.
"Tonight everyone will be here to watch the king join with Mommy and give our kind a future. That is when I will take you out. Until then, I have a place for you to wait. Come."
She turned left. Aggie found himself at the cavern's wall, a dead end. Hillary slid past a tall boulder and into a hidden space. She vanished from sight. Aggie gently adjusted his grip on the knit bag, then followed. Chapter 26. A Blast from Amy's Past. It was like walking into a time warp. Amy hadn't seen this man in decades. He had the same eyes, the same mouth, and the same face, although wrinkles had blurred and softened his features. But all the time in the world couldn't fade the memory of their last meeting.
"Alder Jessup," she said.
He smiled and nodded.
"Amy Zhao, it's been a long time."
She looked at the man just behind Alder. Again, that time warp sensation. The man looked like the Alder she remembered from so long ago, if that Alder had been a metal hipster douchebag.
"Hey, cop," the younger man said. "Gestapo's teardowns might work on trust fund kitties, but I'm past that level."
Alder closed his eyes and sighed.
"Chief Amy Zhao, this is my grandson, Adam. Adam was just going to get himself a cup of coffee."
Adam smiled and nodded.
"Nice meeting you, Chief. If I stumble upon a rampaging herd of wild donuts, I'll break out the spear gun and bring you breakfast."
The angry young man walked off, his chains and jewelry rattling with each step.
"My apologies,"
Alder said.
"All I can say is that his talent is well worth the trouble."
"Mr. Jessup, why are you here?"
"I came to watch over Jebediah. I assume you're here to do the same. If you are, perhaps you should come out to my automobile. Adam has brought several items that could be of use to you should Marie's children attack."
Those words nearly made Amy flinch. She looked up and down the hall. No one was paying attention. She leaned in.
"Alder, we have this covered. I have people on duty to protect him. I just came from Erickson's room. He's not awake yet, but he's getting better."
Alder sighed in that way old men can sigh and make you feel like a child no matter what age you are.
"All this time, my dear, and you still don't truly understand."
She thought back to the nightmares she'd seen in Erickson's basement. Alder was right. She hadn't truly understood what was out there, how many were out there. He patted her on the shoulder.
"I'm not just here to protect Jebediah," he said. "I would like to have a word with you about a police officer of yours. I think we need to discuss one Brian Clauser."
Chapter 27. Zhao Talks to Brian. Brian stood on the sidewalk of Potrero Avenue, watching Pookie stare at the Buick's driver's side window. Streetlight gleamed against the cracks in the glass, lit up the tentacle-like sprawl of beer tendrils that had dried in place.
Awesome, Pookie said. You know, sometimes when people borrow my car, they get it washed and leave me with a full tank of gas. But this is so much better.
I said I was sorry. I'll pay for it.
With what? Food stamps? We're fired, remember?
Brian rubbed his eyes and shook his head.
Really, man? I think we've got more important things to worry about than the window of your POS Buick.
Pookie shrugged.
Yeah, we do. Like the $200 you owe me for my trip to Oakland.
You thought I was in Oakland?
Did I mention I looked everywhere? Why, yes. Yes, I think I did mention that.
But $200?
I took a cab, Pookie said. You know how I hate public transportation. Kind of the reason I bought a car. Know what I'm saying?
Pookie didn't get pissed that often. But when he did, he didn't stop talking about it. He wanted and deserved an apology.
Look, I'm sorry I didn't call you, okay?
Pookie nodded.
Apology accepted. But too bad you're not talking to your dad. I'd have him ground you for trashing my ride.
Pookie Chang, lone resident of No Subject is Off Limits Land.
That man is not my father.
And I'm not chubby, Pookie said. Amazing how we can just wish things into existence.
With what I'm going through, are you really going to go there? Now?
Pookie shrugged.
You need to get over it. I think you filled your quota for feeling sorry for yourself.
Feeling sorry for myself? You jackass! I'm a goddamn mutant or whatever.
Pookie used his jacket sleeve to wipe at the dried beer tentacles.
So you got an extra chromosome. It's not like you got cancer, bro. It is what it is, so accept it and let's move on.
Maybe Brian should have done this solo after all. Only Pookie could reduce being a mutant, finding out your entire childhood had been a lie, and tracking down serial killers that were actually your half-brothers to just get over it. Pookie stopped wiping at the cracked window. He turned to stare at Brian.
You thinking you should ditch me? For my safety, maybe?
Brian looked down at the sidewalk. He hated it when his partner did that. Pookie feathered back his hair.
Forget it, my young rebel detective. No one wants a show about a loner cop. I told you, I'm down for the gunfight. You're stuck with me. Agreed.
Brian looked up. Before he could answer, Pookie pointed down the sidewalk.
Uh-oh, he said. Here come the judge.
Brian followed Pookie's gaze and saw Amy Zhao walking quickly toward them, dress blues pressed, hat positioned perfectly on her head.
She doesn't seem happy, Pookie said.
Does she ever?
No, he said. Shall we make a run for it?
Too late, and I've got a few things I want to hear from her.
Brian crossed his arms, leaned against the black station wagon, and tried to look disrespectful. He wasn't sure how to do that. Maybe he'd have to get some lessons from Adam. She stopped in front of them.
Clouser, she said. Chang?
Chief, Brian said.
Milfy woman who fired my ass,
Pookie said. Zhao ignored the comment.
Clouser, we need to talk, alone.
Brian looked at Pookie. Pookie shook his head slightly. Even if Brian wanted the man gone, he wouldn't go anywhere.
Pookie stays, Chief, Brian said. Anything you want to say to me, you can say in front of my partner.
Life partner, Pookie said, but only for tax purposes. Oh, and the Bed Bath & Beyond registry.
Zhao turned her humorless stare on Pookie. She held it until he looked away. She turned back to Brian.
Alder told me that you're one of them.
She said it with such a matter-of-fact tone. Zhao was right, and so was Robin. He was one of them.
I don't understand any of it, Chief. I have no idea what's happening, and it's freaking me out.
But you came to the hospital, she said. Why?
Brian looked at Pookie, who just shrugged. Brian nodded to the building beyond the brick wall.
We put Erickson in there. Alder said Marie's children might come for him. so we're here to protect him if we can.
I have a full SWAT in and on that building,
she said.
They have Erickson's floor on lockdown. Marie's children are hard to find, sure, but it's a different battle if they have to come to us.
She stared at him. Brian stared back. She seemed to be sizing him up. He wasn't in the mood for whatever power game she wanted to play. Look, he said, we were just trying to do the right thing. The hardness around her eyes faded. Now she was the one to turn away.
I know that feeling. This time maybe we'll fix the damage you caused before the really bad shit starts.
She met his eyes again.
At least now you guys understand what has to be done. Yes and no, Pookie said. You can't keep this a secret forever. People need to know what's going on. The victims' families deserve to know what happened to their loved ones. Their loved ones died, Zhao said. Knowing what killed them won't bring them back. What do you want, Chang? Do you want to tell the world that San Francisco has a killer cult, or that it has real live monsters?
Both,
Pookie said.
People need to know that there's something out there that can kill them.
No, they don't need to know. When a killer shows up, Erickson puts it down.
Pookie threw up his hands.
Are you insane? If you don't make this public, more people could die.
People die every day, Zhao said. That's life in the big city. We're talking two, maybe three murders a year on average.
On average? Those are human beings.
In San Francisco proper, 800 people a year get hit by cars, she said. 20 of those accidents end in death, give or take. And then you have life-changing injuries. But do we take out the roads and make everyone walk because traffic is dangerous?
That's ridiculous, Pookie said. You can't compare shit like that.
Really? Well, can I compare apples to apples? Or should I say murders to murders? We had 50 murders in San Francisco last year, 45 the year before that, and 94 3 years ago. Most of those killings were gang-related. So we know gangs kill far more people than Marie's children, yet we don't get rid of the gangs.
Her logic was faulty, fractured. Brian couldn't understand her reasoning.
Chief, we're talking about serial killers. Monsters. We're talking about the public's right to know. The public knows about traffic deaths, and people stay. Fine. Same for the gang activity. Fine with that, too. They don't know about Marie's children.
She shook her head as if Brian and Pookie just couldn't understand the obvious.
Sure, we tell the public, she said, and that makes property values plummet.
Property values? Why would she say that? What did a cop care about property values? What wasn't she telling them? Brian heard Chief Zhao's cell phone buzz. She pulled it out of her pocket and read. She looked up at Brian.
I've got to take care of something. Don't go anywhere. We'll talk about this later.
Pookie raised his hand like a school kid in class.
Chief, does this mean we have our jobs back? Maybe with a couple of accoutrements known as a badge and a gun?
She looked at Pookie, but this time without her trademark cold stare. Then she looked at Brian. She sighed and shook her head as if she'd already made a decision she knew she'd regret. She looked up at the darkening sky.
I'll get you back on the rolls tomorrow, she said. For now, I'll let the watch sergeant know you can enter the hospital. And move your cars into the parking lot. We've got space allotted for police vehicles. You don't have to sit out on the street all night.
She turned and walked away, the phone clutched tightly in her right hand. Brian let out a sigh of relief. He had his job back, but more important, so did the friend who seemed willing to stand by his side no matter what. And Chief Zhao, that ridiculous logic of hers. Property values. He'd talk to her about that later. For the moment, however, he was a cop again, and his primary duty was to protect Jebediah Erickson from any harm. Chapter 28. Phone Home. The Hubs. Honey, need to speak with you. Urgent. Go somewhere private. Amy Zhao walked through the hospital parking lot toward her car. Jack never sent texts like that.
Had his father finally passed away? Had something happened to the twins? She reached her car and got in. She shut the door, took a deep breath, then dialed her husband's cell phone. It picked up on the second ring, but it wasn't her husband who answered.
Hello, Mrs. Zhao.
A boy? It sounded like a teenager, or someone just about to enter his teen years. Who is this?
I want to meet you,
the boy said.
I've already met your family.
Amy closed her eyes and took in a deep breath. A knot of fear blossomed in her belly. Amy knew what it was to be afraid for herself. Being afraid for her children was infinitely worse. This might be nothing. Maybe Jack lost his phone and some kid thought this was funny. She had to stay calm.
What's your name?
Rex.
That feeling in her belly swelled into her chest, her throat.
Rex. Doprovtichuk.
You already know me,
he said.
How nice.
Rex, the boy who had strangled his own mother to death with a belt. The boy who was somehow mixed up with Marie's children. Somehow connected with the deaths of Oscar Woody, Jay Perlar, and Bobby Pigeon. The boy her entire police force hadn't been able to find.
Rex, listen to me. I don't know what you think you're doing, but you need to turn yourself in.
I'm at your house,
he said.
My family came to visit your family. You have a very nice house, Mrs. Zhao.
He was at her house? Oh, God, what was going on? Amy had to keep control of this, make the boy understand he was in deep shit.
That's Chief Zhao, Amy said, as in Chief of Police.
Yes, ma'am. Why else would I want to talk to you?
Good, she said. Then maybe you know how much power I have, and what I'm capable of if you do anything to my family.
Rex laughed.
Come home right now, Mrs. Zhao. Don't call for backup. I have people watching your neighborhood. We see cop cars, even those unmarked ones, and your family is in a lot of trouble.
Amy's eyes squeezed shut. She forced them to open.
Let me talk to my husband.
Sure,
Rex said.
Hold on one sec.
Amy waited, her heart hammering in her chest, every inch of her body crawling and churning. How could this have happened? How?
Baby,
Jack said.
Jack! The girls!
We're all okay,
he said.
But they'll hurt the twins if you don't do what they say. Oh my God, Amy, these things. They're not human.
Images of the shark-mouthed man flashed through Amy's thoughts. She felt tears streaming down her face. The boy spoke again.
20 minutes, Mrs. Zhao. Then we start slicing.
If you hurt...
A click from the other end cut off her threats. She set the phone in the passenger seat. She jammed the keys in the ignition, started the car, and shot out of her parking spot. Chapter 29. Chillin' Like a Villain. Rex tried to relax in a big lazy boy recliner. Sly said it was the chair most like a throne, so Rex should sit in it. His feet didn't quite reach the extended footrest. His heels dangled in the space between the pad and the seat cushion.
I like this movie,
Sly said, laughing.
I've seen this one 15 times. No. 16.
They were watching Reservoir Dogs on Chief Amy Zhao's TV. Rex had never seen it. Roberta hadn't liked gangster flicks. Rex was having a hard time concentrating on the movie, but it would pass the time until Chief Zhao made it home. Pierre was upstairs with the father and the girls. Rex had worried that Pierre might kill someone, kill them early, but Sly assured him that Pierre could follow orders.
I wish she had Lord of the Rings, Rex said. That's my favorite.
On the TV, Mr. Blonde danced a slow shuffle across the screen, straight razor in hand, as the bloody, duct-taped cop breathed heavily through his nose.
Love this part,
Sly said.
Mr. Blonde is going to cut off that cop's ear.
Hey, no spoilers.
Sorry, my king.
It's okay.
Rex watched. Such a nice house. Way nicer than where he'd lived with Roberta. Way, way nicer than home. Home was really cool, but Rex wondered if the dampness and the dirt had an effect on everyone. There had to be a way to find them a better place to live, yet keep them hidden from all the humans that would burn them, kill them. Sly pointed at the screen.
See that Mr. Orange, my king? Firstborn reminds me of him.
Which one is Mr. Orange?
Sly walked to the screen and put a finger on the actor lying on a ramp, his white shirt bright red with blood.
This one. You can't trust Mr. Orange. He's looking out for himself. He's not looking out for the gang.
Sly wouldn't stop talking about Firstborn. Sly was Rex's best friend, but his hatred of Firstborn was starting to get in the way. Firstborn seemed like a good guy. It was so complicated. Firstborn had saved the people from extinction, saved Rex's real mother. But he had also killed babies, killed Rex's grown-up brothers and sisters as well. Sly hadn't killed any babies. Sly had killed Rex's enemies, had given Rex his new life. And Sly had fought Firstborn when Firstborn wanted to kill Rex. It was hard to figure all this out.
Firstborn will be cool, Rex said. He knelt. He declared me king.
Sly shrugged his big shoulders and returned to the couch.
Sometimes people lie, my king. Don't forget, if something should happen to you, he'd be in charge again.
But I told the people to kill him if anything happened to me.
Sly shrugged again.
Firstborn has ruled for over a century. His rule is all we've ever known. Unless you name someone to succeed you, then he might kill you and just take his chances. See if he can take over in the confusion.
Rex fell silent. He watched the movie some more, watched Mr. Blonde's white shirt blaze in the afternoon sun as he fetched a gas can out of the back of a white Cadillac. Maybe Sly was right. Firstborn had led for, what, like 150 years? Maybe it was hard to give that up. Rex needed to take that motivation away.
Sly, what if I actually named a... What's the word? The word for who takes over if I'm gone.
Successor?
That's it, Rex said. If I named a successor, made it real clear, do you think Firstborn would support me? Do you think that would work?
Sly's eyes narrowed in thought.
Maybe. You'd have to tell everyone all at once, I think, so there's no misunderstanding about who would take over. If you did that, he'd know he can't win.
Sly nodded slowly.
Yeah, then I think he'd follow you for sure.
On the screen, Mr. Blonde doused the duct-taped cop with gasoline.
You need someone you can really trust,
Sly said.
Otherwise, that person might try to kill you too. I don't want to see anything happen to you.
Mr. Blonde flicked his lighter. Just before he could set the cop on fire, gunshots rang out. Mr. Orange shot Mr. Blonde several times. Mr. Blonde fell dead. Sly said Firstborn was like Mr. Orange. Rex turned in his chair to look at the snake-faced man.
Can I trust you, Sly?
Sly looked down. Rex didn't know if a man with green, pebbly skin could blush, but Sly seemed overwhelmed with emotion.
Of course, my king. I'll always do your bidding. If you're going to name someone as your successor, you could do it tonight, when everyone is assembled to see you enter Mommy's cabin.
Rex fell silent. Hillary said Rex had to go be with Mommy. start making new queens as soon as possible. I'm kind of nervous about that. What if I don't want to do it? Sly smiled.
Whatever you want to do,